Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. It is the morning shift. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson and Bo Morgan at 7:02. This hour is brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. So it's 11 days until the first preseason game, 41 days until the Falcons take on the Bucks for the first regular season game. At this time of year, we're going to get into Jeff Ulbrich in a moment, but at this time of year, since both of you are part of the Atlanta Falcons radio network, are you hyped? Are you starting to get a little stressed out?
I'm hyped about the 11 days you just said. The 41 seems an eternity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think that's closer than it feels.
I think it's just part of my fabric as a fan. I know it's part of Bo's as well, because we've been dealing with this for a few years now. And it's not just the Falcons. It's the Braves and it's everybody else that you just – it's the eternal optimism of, I would call it, 90% of Atlanta fans. And you saw the – you saw the crowd out there on the Hill and the reaction to that. There's been national reaction to the crowd on the Hill. Like, Sports Illustrated was Instagramming the crowd at Atlanta Falcons training camp and talking about how many people were out there. So, yeah, I mean, it's – I think the optimism surrounding the team, at least for myself, is simply that I feel like this team is trending in the right direction. Doesn't mean I believe they're going to go out and win the division necessarily, but they're trending in the right direction, and they seem to be putting the pieces together to make an extended run. And I think that that level of optimism is something that I know Bo and I share in terms of the way we talk about this team.
Oh, of course. But this time of the year, would you say how many days are we before our first preseason game?
Is it 11?
11? Yeah, this is where my stress level just, like,
stomach in a knot
just
a little
blows
bit.
Up. Like, because I'm trying to track people down for stuff. Like, I'm worried about
the business side of it.
Logistics.
It's both. I'm trying to figure out all the things I've got to do to put together this broadcast that we have in 11 days, but also at the same time, pay attention to what's happening on the field and learn those things as well, because there's the nuts and bolts of the broadcast, but also the knowledge part as well, and kind of paying attention to everything that's happening. So, yeah, my excitement takes a back seat once we get into the kind of the meat of camp, like, which is I would consider putting on the pads is kind of that before the first preseason game. Once we get to the first preseason game, I take a deep breath and I'm like, okay, now we can just roll through this. And then it does get a little bit monotonous, you know, with, you know, three preseason games. We're not seeing guys that we necessarily really, really want to see. You're seeing guys that are, in some ways, fighting for jobs, right? I mean, so that's kind of what a lot of...
Not just some ways, in every way, all fighting
right.
for jobs. Yeah,
well, I mean,
in all the ways.
There'll be some guys that aren't fighting for jobs that'll play, but there'll be others that are absolutely fighting for... And I just mean, when I mean job, I mean a job at all, like on the 53-man roster.
Right, exactly. Well, just a reminder, we will be out at Atlanta Falcons training camp again tomorrow, broadcasting live from Flowery Branch. Now, let's get into Jeff Ulbrich's audio from yesterday. We were talking earlier on the show how it got a little heated at camp, and Jeff Ulbrich had some comments about that intensity and maybe it going a little bit too far.
Yeah, we're trying to develop a culture, a style of play for sure. And part of that is the violence which we play and the aggression, the urgency and all that. Today at times, it went a little too far and we got to learn how to manage that. You're going to get agitated, especially when you're playing really good defense. The offense is going to get very agitated. So you got to anticipate punches being thrown, things being said, people getting pushed. And in those moments, you got to thrive and not retaliate. And so it's a good lesson to be learned today.
Well, yeah, and that's a lesson that you hope practice, you know, practice what whatever you do in practice bleeds over to a game. If you're throwing punches in practice, right, and letting your emotions go take yourself too far, that'll bleed over to the game, because then that's kind of how you handle things. Also, there's a fine line between going too far, but the only thing that I had that does bug me, I love the energy from like James Pierce and all that, the only thing that does slightly bother me is I do think that it overshadowed an otherwise really good practice he had. And you heard like Kirk Cousins pulled him aside after a batted ball and was like, hey, that was great. How'd you do that? You know, that's phenomenal intensity. I think most people are going to be talking about the fight and not the fact that he's had a really good couple of days.
Well, and you hear it there in Jeff Ulbrich's voice. The only people that actually probably dislike the fighting for the most part are coaches. Because what are you doing? When you're fighting, you spend so much energy on fighting for the players. And then as coaches and other players, you spend so much energy, you know, separating it or cooling it down or whatever you need to do in that aspect. And you lose reps at practice because of these kind of things, right? And so you don't want to ever risk the injury and things like that. So I hear what Jeff Orbach's coming from. It's like, we love the intensity, just a little bit over the line. You know, when you start punching helmets and everybody's throwing hands, things like that can happen. But I think Jeff Orbach kind of shares the same kind of takeaway I do. It's bound to happen. Like, this is just bound to happen when you have the intensity that you have during training camp, especially when you start to get a little bit tired of practice day three, day four.
Yeah, and he did kind of call out James Pierce Jr. specifically on being in a few of these skirmishes.
Yeah, he's prideful as it gets. You know, he loves this game. He's got deep love for his teammates, and he's prideful, and he wants to come out here and create a strong impression on everybody, himself included, that he can do this, and he can do this at a high level. And I think when you're in that place of just, like, every ounce of your body's trying to prove who you are, sometimes, like, it gets to that place where it can get a little wacky sometimes, and his anger got the best of him a little bit, and it's going to be a great learning experience for him. Now, what I'll say is the really promising part of all of that exchange was, after the fact, a lot of young guys, after a moment of, like, real anger, frustration, and you know, getting out of whack, they're lost for practice. He was the opposite. It was like he reset, came back, took a deep breath, and I think he made three or four, like, really amazing plays after the fact. So it's promising.
And I love to hear that from Jeff Orbach when he says, you know, he loves the game. I think one of the biggest questions about James Pierce was, you know, how much does he the questions surrounding his draft status and everything going in is, does he love the game? Does this, that, and the other? You know, is the work ethic there? If I hear Jeff Orbach say it, I have no reason to not believe it. I mean, Jeff Olbrich's one of those guys that, and you can hear that in his voice, he's going to throw it out there. And sounds like he was a big proponent of what James Pierce was doing yesterday. And he was. Bo brings up a good point. One of the biggest takeaways, and Dylan and I had a chance to catch up with Abe, who watched practice, and it was like James Pierce was everywhere. In the backfield, batting down passes, picking things off, obviously talking trash and doing everything you're asking of him. So he's made an impression so far, definitely, for Coach Olbrich as well.
Yeah, I love hearing Olbrich talk about a young player like that. He talking about, like, he's out there to make an impression. You know, that's part of it. He's got something to prove. He's trying to show you why he was worth that trade up, right? And why everybody that doubted him was wrong. I don't know. I got a really good feeling about James Pierce Jr. And it's weird because I didn't during the draft process. Like, I really didn't. Like, during most of the draft process, I didn't have that great feeling. But 3 days in of practice, because they've only had 3 days of practice, 4 days of camp, technically, you kind of feel good about it, right? You kind of feel good about what it could be. So it's interesting to see it. Let's see what happens when the pads come on, and let's see what happens when they get in a preseason game. I know Braylon Trice is a guy that we loved last year. He's been the forgotten man at this camp, but he got in a little bit during the weekend, and you heard good things about it. He made a little bit of a, not noise, but the fact that people recognized him.
Well, and I want to stay on James Pierce for just a second, too. And I think you bring up a good point, is that when we talk so much, this is not talking season or list season or ranking season that we have so many times during the offseason. Like, we're right here in the beginning of training camp. And so it's, to me, it's one step above that, but it's not quite the season you're going to get starting tomorrow when the pads come on. This is a little bit of talking season, right? It's, You're able to do so many different things, particularly on a pass rusher. And Dylan and I talked about it yesterday at times, because Saturday it comes out that the defense had a really good day. Olbrich had installed some blitzes Saturday. The blitzes are getting into the backfield and things like that. And my ultimate takeaway, and we actually talked a little bit to Lindstrom about this as well, is if a defense in a padless practice wants to start blitzing and wants to get in the backfield, there's really not a lot you can do about it as an offensive line. Like, what are you gonna step in and put your helmet up under the guy's chin when he's blitzing in the A-gap? No. Like, you're not gonna do that. You're gonna get in trouble by your coaches if you do that, and probably the NFLPA. It's literally outlawed. So if a Caden Ellis is blitzing in the B-gap and they're running a twist stunt and they want to get in the backfield, eventually they will. There's not much you can do about it. So, yeah, we'll find out about James Pierce. We'll find out about some of these other guys up front here in the next 48 hours, because they will be on the field with pads and they're going to be asked to do things a little bit differently than they would have done over the weekend. So physicality is going to take an uptick. There's no doubt about it, and we'll see. It's going to be fun starting tomorrow.
You know, and don't forget, when being the new guy somewhere, that comes with a little bit of something. Like, he there's other guys on that field that probably look at him as a first-round draft pick. Talking about James Pierce Jr. is like, well, you got to prove it. And he's heard those whispers from outside the building, and he knows that there's other guys that he feels like he's got to prove it to. I love the fact that Leonard Floyd came to his defense quickly, because that makes me think that, well, one, Leonard Floyd's trying to show that leadership, but two, ain't there anything wrong with what James Pierce done, right? Maybe if he did, he probably would have broke it up, but he got in there with him. I love a good fight. I know you used to fight all the time at practice. Mike was a fighter.
I was until that I got told to stop. And there was a certain point in my rookie training camp where I've gotten three fights in like three straight days, and Mike Smith was like, all right, dude, I get it. Take it down a notch. Like, it's a little bit much.
What was it, you or Joe Holly that got kicked out one time?
He got kicked out. I think he got kicked out in reaction because Mike Smith, after I had gotten a fight for a couple of days, was like, next person gets in fights, get kicked out. And it was a crossover. That was a crossover practice. I think it was against the Titans.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, here not long.
Do you think Mike Smith knew it was you or Joe Holly?
I don't know. At the time, I don't know. I hope he knows that one was Joe.
Well, based on your experience, then, do you think anyone was pulled aside yesterday and was like, okay, look?
I think probably yesterday the whole team. Yeah. The whole team probably was, and you have two scuffles in one practice. I don't know that it happened on the field. Like I said, we didn't have eyes on it, but I guarantee you in the team meeting room, Raheem's like, all right, I get it. You know, we're tired. But at the end of the day, you got to focus on what you're trying to get accomplished on the field and making sure you're not doing something that you can't take back on the field, right? You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I'm sure Raheem gave the old save the energy for the plays, you know, for between the whistles and things like that. And it is what it is, though, man. You're never going to stop it. And I will say this as well. The day that you show up on a Saturday and Sunday and it's practices three or four, whatever it is, and there's not scuffles, you should be a little bit concerned.
Yeah.
Because they're probably not at the right energy level.
And I agree with that. I got a question off of that. I know I listened to you guys for a couple hours yesterday. I was doing some yard work, doing some errands. You specifically gave Abe Gordon a checklist of things to look for.
I did.
How did he measure up?
Not great. Not great. And he told me off the rip. He was looking at my checklist. I sent him what, six things or seven things?
Give us
things?
An example or two of what was on the checklist, like a detailed thing.
Okay.
I know that you can go in. When I talk to you sometimes, you'll go in a little bit of detail, and they'll you know, and I'm not saying that I know more than A or anything, but there'll be times where I'm like, what exactly do you mean? Because I'm always trying to learn the game. I know Abe is as well.
Let me see. Okay, so I asked him who was the third wide receiver in the first group. This is the first question I asked him. I want to know who the third wideout is in the first group the first time they go 11 personnel. Should be Drake and Ray and who? Like, there's gonna, like,
yeah, because Darnell's not out there.
Right, Darnell's injured. Saturday it was Cadarell Hodge, and I wanted to know if that was going to continue into Sunday. And he just immediately failed. He knew he was going to. He goes, looks like Ray's out with he's out there with the first group.
Well, that wasn't the question.
That wasn't the question, Ray-Ray though. I knew Ray was going to be out there with 11 personnel in the first group. I wanted to know who the other wide receiver was out there with Drake and Ray. I think we all knew. And I said, it's probably going to be Cadarell Hodge. And he just said, well, Ray's out. First snap I saw, McLeod with the first team offense. That was exactly
that
what he said.
Wasn't the question.
Second snap, both he and Hodge were out there. That's still not what I'm asking.
Yeah.
That's still not what I'm trying to say.
I think that just shows the depth of knowledge
you have, though. I try. Like, literally, and Dylan can attest this. We're in a group that I tried to dumb it down as far as I could just to be like, I don't blame you if you can't answer this, but this is what I want to know.
Who's holding the ball?
And he was like, dude.
You tried your best to make it as elementary as possible. I will give you credit on that.
The explanation for some of this is one of the reasons Mike's asking that is they did sign DJ Shark off on Friday night, I think, who apparently Easton Stick was just singing the praises of, who because he worked out with him during the offseason, which I think Josh Kendall told Dylan and Mike that yesterday. That's where I heard that tidbit. But so you kind of figure out where DJ Shark is in that chart, right, in that list. But the other thing is Abe is kind of a guy that prides himself on knowing more than everybody. And he does this little goofy eye roll and smirk. And I bet he did that when Mike asked him.
His response was this. I know we got to get a break. His response was, I'll see what I can do. I don't really watch practice in that manner, but I will try. I usually watch to see whether a pass is a drop, a bad throw, or a throwaway. Plus, anything that just pops out. But just so you know what level of sophistication you're working with. So he laid it out there, and I appreciated the efforts.
What I heard from that is, I just watched practice to see who I can criticize.
Well, we're going to be out there to see the Falcons at training camp tomorrow. It will be interesting to see what changes when pads come on, just like Mike mentioned. And coming up, we're going to go in the huddle. A rookie finally got to sign his deal. We'll get into that next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and
the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are the morning shift. I'm Allie Mack. Mike Johnson is here. So is Bo Morgan. And of course, Dylan is keeping us on the rails behind the glass, or at least trying his best to. We've got the wake-up call coming up at 8 a.m. Doing things a little differently now with wake-up call, where you get to ask your questions. You can ask about Falcons training camp, what we're seeing out there, or how Mike watches the game, being a former Falcon himself. Or on the personal front, you can ask Bo how the Yellow Jacket situation is shaping up, which I'm assuming no news is good news on that, Bo.
Yeah, I haven't. So I'm, it's kind of a, I'm in a little bit of a weird place because I want to go out there and investigate a little bit more, mm-hmm. but I haven't. I need to go do some work out there. So I've got a game plan, and I want you to know, won't you tell me what you think of it? I want to see if I was successful. So I'm going to take a stick, a big stick. I actually have like a kind of a limb that's fallen in one other part of the yard in the backyard. And it's my backyard is no grass, nothing. It's just a pine. It's just trees and pine straw, right? I'm going to take this kind of a limb. I'm going to throw it onto the infected area. And I say infected of where the nest was because it's underground. And if I see Yellow Jacket swarming, I know that I've not won. And if I don't, then I'm going to take it as victory. What do you guys think? Is that bad?
How often do you walk towards this Yellow Jacket's nest?
Well,
like on a monthly basis. How many times would you say you walk towards this position, this place in your yard?
Well, I used to walk back there to maintain a little bit more, but right now I haven't because.
But you said it's just pine straw and trees.
Well, there's some weeds that have grown up that I want to take care of.
All right.
Can I make a quick suggestion?
Sure.
I think it might be a little bit better of an idea if you – do you have like a long stick of some sort that you can kind of poke it and prod it with?
That's even – I think that's worse than throwing something and running.
Thomas J. yourself
I think,
on that.
But I think throwing something – I think you might get false hope that there's nothing happening when that may not be true.
That might be a good
– I think throwing might not – it might not get them going enough to wrestle them up.
Oh, it is because I'm going to – it's a good-sized limb, and I'm going to be able to get close enough to kind of stir it.
Okay. All right.
My only point was going to be that, like, why? You know what I mean?
Because
like, if you're not walking near this area very often, then like just let it be.
Well, you know, I mean, I think you should still check
because the reason I was back there in the first place and stepped on it is there was some poke salad that had grown up, and I need to get rid. There's still quite a few that are back there. I want to get them done. Mm-hmm. It's bothering me the way it looks, and so. That's why I was doing it, and then I caught hell, and then I sent it back, and now I want to know where we're at.
Well, get your questions in for the wake-up call. That'll be coming up at 8 a.m. You can tweet them at us at 929-MORNINGSHIFT or use the good old-fashioned way. Call us right at 8 a.m. Now it's time to go in the huddle. So the Chargers have made Rashawn Slater the highest-paid offensive lineman in NFL history. With $114 million with his extension, 92 guaranteed. I guess you're excited about that, Mike.
I just love seeing the big man get their money like that, especially a guy of the caliber of Rashawn Slater. Man, he is. We've mentioned Tristan Wirfs on this show a number of times because he's the left tackle for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I've mentioned all the time in the last couple of years he has played at a Hall of Fame level. Rashawn Slater's right there. I would say them along with Trent Williams. Probably the three best left tackles in the NFL, just in terms of pass protection. So it's really nice to see him get his money. It is a bag of money. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited for him. I think as far as the Chargers goes, this is smart. They do need probably a wide receiver one, but you've got him. You drafted Joe Alt last year, who is a pretty good player in his own right so far. So you've got Justin Herbert set up for success. You've got two quality offensive tackles for at least the next four seasons. To be able to make things happen. So, yeah, man, I think it's a good look. He's a really, really good player and deserves money, deserves to be paid at the top of the board like that.
Now, the more I see stuff like this, the more I'm like, man, Herbert's running out of excuses.
He's starting to enter Bryce Young territory.
No. I think he's entering, I would say more Kyler Murray than Bryce Young because Herbert's made the playoffs, so's Kyler Murray. They've had good years, but they can't bust through that ceiling. I mean, they laid an egg in Houston last year. And Herbert, I think, threw like four picks in that game. So in that playoff game. So
yeah,
I just I think he's really good, but I think he gets a little too much love, Herbert.
Yeah, and when I say he's entering Bryce Young territory, I don't by any means think of them as a similar quarterback. I think Justin Herbert's far and away more talented than Bryce Young right now, but they have done – like, if Bryce Young can't succeed this year for the Panthers, then he's just simple. Like, you just don't know what to do. Like, they've done everything possible to put pieces around him to allow him to succeed as a starting quarterback. They've drafted wide receivers. They've signed offensive linemen to big deals. They've brought in different, obviously, offensive coaches and different people who can develop. And Dave Canales was brought in for that exact reason, because he developed Baker Mayfield and Geno Smith and whoever else. So you're getting to the point with a couple of these guys where it's like, man, we're going to give you every possibility to succeed, and you better be able to do it here in the near-term future.
Yeah, I understood is kind of where you were going. I just feel like the better comp is Kyler Murray, because they've went through multiple coaches. They brought in – and they even brought in a coach originally that was supposed to be able to run a system. Then you hear Kyler Murray say, I think we should run more off-schedule plays. Like, huh? Like, wait, what?
How do you call those?
I mean, that you heard that comment though, right? Where he's like, we should do more stuff off-schedule, and it's like –
Trips right, bunch.
So,
Chuck and Duck.
Yeah, hey, like just run around, like just run around and look, you know, like there's a, like you run into a car or something.
That's crazy.
He just want to play. He just wants to play a little flag football. Well,
that's what it is, man. Backyard ball.
That's not, you know,
Thanksgiving style.
No, that's not. I'm sure offensive linemen love to hear that.
Well, the Cleveland Browns quarterback, Kenny Pickett, has suffered a hamstring injury. That's going to give more reps to Joe Flacco, Dylan Gabriel, and Shedeur Sanders.
Okay. I keep hearing about this this quarterback competition, and I keep hearing some people like want to pencil in Shedeur Sanders as the favorite, and then they question, especially the two young guys, I should say, as in if Flacco was the starter, and then whichever one's going to take over. I solely or strictly believe that Joe Flacco is going to start the season as a quarterback, and I've believed for a while that Dylan Gabriel will be the first guy that relieves him, unless Shedeur Sanders just blows by him somehow in practice. Because the reason I believe that is they would have drafted Shedeur Sanders before Dylan Gabriel if they were higher on Shedeur Sanders, to me.
Well, and you know, it's been interesting, too, and I think Shedeur was asked over the weekend that he's the only one of the group that hasn't gotten reps with the first team. The videos I've seen, he's looked okay. I mean, but if you just, you know, took names off of jerseys and you watch most NFL quarterbacks on an NFL roster at this point, they're going to look okay. So, I don't know, man. Maybe this does open a door for some extra reps somewhere here and there with Kenny Pickett having the hamstring injury. I don't think anybody knows at this point the severity of the hamstring injury, so we'll see. But, I mean, it is what it is at this point. And, you know, how much time do you spend talking about the third-string quarterback battle of the Cleveland Browns? For me, it's not going to be much. It just kind of is what it is right now.
I mean, the names that's attached to it really pushes a lot of people into it, because they want to throw stones on one side or the other.
Well, and kind of a similar story coming out of the 49ers. Juwan Jennings left practice with a calf injury. No word yet on the severity of it.
Didn't Juwan Jennings just make a big deal about wanting a new contract?
Probably. It seems like everybody in San Francisco does that every year.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, and this is the last thing the 49ers want to see, because their 2024 was injury-riddled.
Yeah.
So that's the last thing.
They don't
have
Debo anymore. And Ayuk has the knee injury, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So
they just activated Pearsall. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's one thing after another with that team out there. And look, you know, it is what it is, man. You got to have everybody really step up to the plate. Well, eventually, it's just going to get to a point where you're like, dude, they've missed their window.
Hey, remind me, wasn't that what we thought Christian McCaffrey was dealing with last year, was a calf strain?
Yeah.
To begin with, right? Yeah, right? I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying that wasn't that what it started with last year for him? And then we saw that ended out.
Yep.
Hey, and there's so much NFL news. Are you guys good if we pause on In the Huddle right now? Pick it back up on the other side, because there is some Aaron Rodgers audio that we need. Can we play that real quick, Dylan?
Put him on the spot.
Okay, we're going to do that on the other
side. We can't.
We're going to play that Aaron Rodgers audio on the other side. That is next with the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and
the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are the morning shift with Mike, Bo, Ali Mac, and Dylan, who I probably drive nuts when I mess things up. This hour has been brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. We've got a mic'd up coming up in a few after we close out In the Huddle, but I didn't give you a chance to tease it. So what do you have coming up?
Yeah, no, it's no worries. So last year around this time, we tried to push, you know, gently push my four-year-old son towards something, and it fell flat. And this year, it's been his idea. So I'm going to get you guys' opinion on whether or not it's a bad idea to believe my and take my four-year-old at his word that things will be different 1 year later.
By the way, I just want to say, Ali, you can never drive me nuts.
Yeah. Yay!
I don't believe
we'll
you.
We'll see. It's only been 4 months, Dylan. We'll see. All right, let's get back to In the Huddle. Aaron Rodgers wants you to know that he wants Terry Bradshaw to get to know him on a deeper level. After Terry Bradshaw called Aaron a joke in a radio interview.
I've known Terry for a long time, being a part of Fox. Terry's a legend. He's an absolute legend. He won 4 Super Bowls. He's had a legendary career in the media. But Terry, like a lot of people, doesn't know me. And so he's got an idea of what he thinks about me based on what I've done, the documentary, what I've said, mm-hmm. Darkness Retreat, whatever the hell you want to talk about. I'd love to get to know Terry on a deeper level. And I feel like if he gave me a chance to get to know him, that we'd have a good friendship. Because for me, I have nothing but the utmost amount of respect and deference for what the greats have done. Because they laid the foundation. You know, we're standing on the backs of those guys, and it's because of how they played and how they carried themselves that we're able to have this opportunity to still play this great game, to get paid really well, to set ourselves up for our future. So I'd love to get to know Terry on a deeper level if he's open to it, and maybe we can go chew some bark or whatever the hell he's talking about together.
I know that people listen to these scenarios and they bet Terry's right or Aaron. No harm, no foul either way for me. Like, well played on both sides of this for me. Terry Bradshaw is right that things were different, you know, 40, 50 years ago in the NFL, and that there wasn't docuseries about Darkness Retreats and everything else and some of the craziness going on. When you thought of the Pittsburgh Steelers, you didn't think of, you know, ayahuasca and doing different things like that. But Aaron Rodgers was smart to play it on his end, knowing that Terry Bradshaw is an absolute freaking legend in every sense of the form when it comes to Pittsburgh. So he's like, you know what, man? I ain't coming back at this guy. Like, why would I do that? I might be in Pittsburgh for 1 year. I don't need the fans roasting me if we stumble anywhere along the lines and say, well, Terry Bradshaw, this and that. It was well played on both ends. Like, I have no issues either way with either person's comments.
I'm a big Terry Bradshaw fan. I actually thought Terry was a little bit ridiculous that he did all that. And I'm not the biggest Aaron Rodgers fan either. I told somebody one day, I said, I think Aaron Rodgers, this is before it really became known of what he was. And I was like, I think he's kind of a selfish dude and kind of, you know, got some narcissistic tendencies, right? And then now it's kind of what we think. I just didn't appreciate Terry's comments. I thought, why go there? Especially knowing that Terry probably knew what the situation was. He was always going to be there. Just they were slow rolling it. But I did think Aaron handled this pretty well.
What are the chances we see a new Netflix series come out where Aaron welcomes Terry to a darkness retreat with him?
I don't think I'd want to go into darkness incredible. With Terry Bradshaw.
Can we just get Terry Bradshaw doing ayahuasca down at like Machu Picchu, something like that? Can you imagine? Can you imagine that? I agree with you to an extent that Terry Bradshaw overstepped a little bit, but you also have to reason that you have to understand this is that guy's life has been the Pittsburgh Steelers. And when you hang on, let me finish. When you go through an offseason where it feels like a four-time MVP is toying with your franchise and holding them hostage at the quarterback position throughout the offseason. Not Aaron Rodgers' fault, but you can see where Terry would feel like that. I don't blame him for feeling a certain way about Aaron Rodgers. When you look at it, and it's like, well, I might come back, or I might not, or I might sign a contract, or I'm going to visit him, but I'm not going to give him an answer, and then I'm going to wait 3 more weeks, and then I'm going to wait till minicamp starts. Like, come on, dude. Like, I can understand where Terry Bradshaw, being old school, would be like, all right, this is a little over the top.
Kind of, but Terry hasn't played since the freaking 80s, man.
I mean, I know.
Early
80s. That kind of feeds into my point.
I kind of feel like his life has been more of a Fox. I think there's more people that know him for being a Fox commentator than do a Steeler quarterback. I'm not saying they don't know that he played quarterback for the Steelers and won 4 Super Bowls. But Terry is very opinionated and critical of people, which is why I've always enjoyed him. So whatever. Kind of a whatever for me.
We've been following this next story for a minute. Shamar Stewart finally signed his rookie deal with the Bengals.
Yes. I feel the exact opposite of that I just talked about with Aaron Rodgers and Terry Bradshaw, that nobody came out of this winning.
No.
Like, zero. You did not come out of this winning. Shamar Stewart did not win. He got an extra $500,000. Okay, great.
Well, it's not even an extra.
It's just guaranteed, right?
No,
it's an extra guarantee.
That's Mike, that's the funny thing, is it's a fully guaranteed contract because of it being a rookie deal and a first-round draft pick. He just gets $500,000 of it earlier than he normally would, and they get the clause that says, if you go to jail for a felony, we don't have to pay you.
It's ridiculous. The whole thing's ridiculous.
The
Bengals are so absurd with the way they do business and the way they've treated their stars and their contracts. And Shamar Stewart's representation should have never let it get this far if you were just going to sign it anyways.
Here's the problem for me. Yes, you're right about the Bengals, right? We both agree that you're right about the Bengals. Agreed? But what world do you go into signing the contract? First off, when does the employer ever say, I want to put a clause in here that if you go to jail, I don't have to pay you your guaranteed money? And in what world do you think you should get paid for being in jail?
Yeah. So I agree with you. It's ridiculous. The whole thing's ridiculous.
But it's never been in a contract before. And so both sides are like, well, I just want to put this in here. And you're like, I'm sorry, what? Want to put a clause in the contract that if I go to jail, you don't have to pay me? And in what world do you think you should be paid for sitting in jail?
I mean, wouldn't you feel a certain way too, because it's never been in a contract before? If it was in a contract here, like at the game, and no one else has it, but it's in my contract,
yes,
I'd be like, what is my contract thinking?
Yes.
No.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. I agree with you. Had they said, hey, by the way,
ding,
we moving forward want to protect the organization, and we will be putting this in everyone's contract, this clause, that any guaranteed money you're entitled to, you will not get while serving a jail sentence. Cool. But it had never been in there, and I don't think they explained it, which is more of how bad the Bengals are at doing business. So if they not have Trey Henderson sitting there, one of the best pass rushers in the league the last 5 years, and they won't sign him to a deal, and they wouldn't have waited for Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, then we wouldn't be talking about it as much.
So Terry McLaurin was back at training camp with the Commanders. He ended his holdout and was placed on the PUP list, but contract negotiations are still going on.
He is now a hold-in, not a hold-out. He will not practice until he gets a new deal, but he's in some of the stuff with his teammates. He can't be on the field. I don't think there's certain meetings he can be a part of, but he can be around his teammates. Now he's a hold-in. Just pay him. Speaking of being ridiculous, pay him.
I don't know, but like it just depends on how much he's asking. Does he want to be a top five, paid as a top five wide receiver? I would. Dude, he's 30 years old. People forget that. This is not like second contract time. This is like,
well,
this is not, he's not like Micah Parsons' age. Like this is, he's starting to age up there.
But you know why he wants to get paid?
Well, yeah, because that window's closing for him to get paid, and he knows that he has all the cards in his hand right now.
Sure, but DK Metcalf, who he came in the league with, the same draft, gets paid when he goes to Pittsburgh. McLaurin has better numbers as far as catches and receptions, just less touchdowns, and is less of a headache than DK Metcalf. And so, and now he's, what, a couple years older than DK Metcalf? But he's
Is he at this point less of a headache? Because it's starting to turn into a little bit of a headache.
Not
that I blame him.
He's gotten in less incidents with teammates. He's been, for the most part, more productive. I think he's a more well-rounded receiver. So he's been less of a headache for the most part. This is the first time he's ever been a headache.
Well, and the Broncos are planning to either build a new stadium or renovate their current one, but they have no timetable for getting things done. They also don't know if it will be open air or dome. So basically, they don't know. They don't know anything.
We don't know anything about anything.
Yeah.
They've reportedly started kind of buying up land in other places just in case. First off, just renovate it. That's another thing's up for the end. They might renovate the Empower Field or whatever it's called now at Mile High. They need to renovate this stadium. It's a beautiful stadium still. Beautiful location. Renovate it. Renovate it. Renovate it. Renovate it. Do not go to a dome. not in Denver.
Yeah.
No.
I struggle with that. I like the feeling of being outdoors. Like, Buffalo's, the Orchard Park thing, they're not going to a dome. I know there's been talk about Cleveland possibly doing a dome or Chicago or whatever. I don't know, man. I go back and forth because I'm going to be real. I wouldn't want to sit in, like, 10-degree weather and watch a football game.
If you think they should play on grass fields, then you think they shouldn't have domes in certain places because a lot of guys are not going to do what other places like Arizona. You don't understand the cost, and it ends up being not the best conditions like it is in Arizona for that Super Bowl where they slipped and slided all over the field.
And as a reminder, before I get into this story, today's Mic'd Up brought to you by Buffalo's Cafe. Come wing it family style at one of Buffalo's Cafe's 13 Atlanta locations. So I will challenge Bo and Dylan if they remember this story from, 11 months ago. We were trying to get my son, out of the house more often and give him something to get his energy kind of out on. And you know, he loves to run around. He loves to be physical. He loves to be active. So we signed him up for baseball, a little bit of baseball. And it was right after he turned four. He turns five in August, just over a couple of weeks away. Do you guys remember how that went when I took him to the baseball field last year?
Was this the one where he wanted to play on the playground across the street or whatever?
that was soccer, right?
Soccer, okay. This baseball one, he went on the field and they got split into groups for instruction. And there was some high school kids around that were helping out and things like that. And they were telling him how to field a ground ball. First group, first instruction. He's awkwardly left-handed, and he wanted to wear his batting helmet for infield, so it was like whatever. But he immediately started crying. 10 minutes into this entire baseball thing. We had paid, for the jerseys and the hats, and we're all ready for him to go, and he was excited to get there, and he walked out on the field, and he started crying. He didn't like, the strangers, very shy. The stranger's talking to him. And I was like, it is what it is. He's freaking four. He turns five in about 3 weeks, and he approached us and was like, hey, I think I want to play baseball. And first of all, he has zero idea what he's even talking about half the time when it comes to sports. There's no clue. But he has approached us and wants to play baseball again. So me and my wife were like, man? He's a year older. He's almost 5 years old. He can kind of make this commitment. So we signed him back up yesterday to go to baseball. Now, it's about a month away from when this starts. But are we dumb for this? Like, am I throwing money away? There is I think it's over a couple hundred dollars to sign him up for baseball, which lasted 10 minutes last year.
Ooh. Well, you didn't call East Cobb baseball and say, we got to give him a tryout
sign him up for 101 Westies with Chipper Jones or anything.
He's already got the glove, right, from last year.
Yeah, he's got the glove from last year, so, left-handed glove.
No, let's try it out. Look, clearly something is spurred in him that he wants to do this.
Maybe I don't know what it was.
Maybe a friend at daycare.
No idea.
Maybe it's a kid in the neighborhood that he's found out plays baseball. And so he clearly thinks that he is – something is maybe going to a couple of baseball games.
Yeah.
Something's gauged his interest.
Yeah.
Well, and a kid's mind just rapidly develops in the amount of time that's been from last year to this year. So I think getting him out there to try it again, there might be a different outcome.
He spent so much time, Dylan, telling everybody for the last year that he's played baseball before. And I'm like, bro, you played baseball for 8 minutes. Like, calm down. You did not play baseball before.
I don't think it's a bad idea, though, to answer your question, Mike. You got to let the kids have their interests, and you gotta let them, feel things out and find things out for themselves. And if baseball has sparked his interest again, let the man go out there and hit some dingers.
If it had been his idea last year and his idea this year, I'd have been like, nah, dog, you done fooled me once. But the fact that we were like, hey, let's go get him active, let's play a little baseball, and he was like, not ready. And this time he brought it up. I just hope we're not wasting, whatever the sign up fee is, $240 or whatever, just for a couple of shirts and hats that are gonna sit in his closet for the next year. So we'll see, man. But that journey is it's a slippery slope that I've been told about baseball in these parts, that once you kind of get on that ride, it's hard to get off.
When's the first practice?
Right around September 1st. We're about a month out.
I'm ready for an update.
Yeah,
we'll seriously. See. Seriously. Well, coming up, man, we've got the wake-up call on the way, 404-726-0929. Jump on the show with us right now. You can ask your questions about Falcons training camp, questions about how Mike and Bo watch the game, because it is very different how most of us watch with their experience with
questions
the team.
Questions about what Allie's favorite Backstreet Boys song is. I'm curious. I don't know which one it was. We'll see.
Oh, my goodness. Which one caused the entire audience to go, wait, what? What are we doing right now? You can give us a call right now, 404-726-0929, or tweet at us at 929 Morning Shift. That is next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and
the Odyssey app.